Welcome to Gemara Marking. Today's shiur is Yevomeh Daf Kuf. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin in the middle of Daf Kuf. For those who like to count lines, 23 lines from the top. Before we begin the actual Gemara, the introduction, the topic heading that we have on the side reads as follows. Under the Nosei, Dinim Hakshurim Lemikre. These are laws that are connected to a case, Shel Taruvis, Vlad Kohenis im Vlad Shibchasa, where two women, as we saw in the Mishnah, had given birth under hidden circumstances, and their children got mixed up. One child is a Kohen, and the other child is a slave. We're going to deal with Shichrurom, the issue of having them freed, and Hakrovas Minchosam, the offering of their meal offering in the Beis Hamikdash. Eich Linhoig B'Shirayim, how are we to deal with the portion of the Mincha that is ordinarily given to the Kohanim, that ordinarily remains after the required handful of meal offering is separated and put into the fire? So, as far as the issue of having them freed, we're going to see that this has to do with the fact that right now they cannot marry because each one is a doubtful Kohen and a doubtful slave at the same time. The Gemara will point this out, and as a result, the issue of freeing them isn't just an option, but it's something mandatory. As far as the laws of the Mincha are concerned, we will talk about that in a minute. Just before we do that, let's deal with the small section, the short section of the Gemara that deals with the freeing of these two individuals. Each one frees the other, as we saw in the Mishnah. So the Gemara begins, Higdilu hataroives. The Mishnah said, V'shichu ze ezeb. When these two children mature, they get older, and then each one will free the other. The Kohen, don't forget, from the Mishnah, is the owner of the slave. So if we knew who he really was, he has the power to free the slave. When a slave is freed, he becomes a full-fledged Jew. So in this case, we don't know who is whom, so each one frees the other. Freeing a slave involves the writing up of a document called a get shichur, and with the slave receiving it, he thereby becomes free. The Mishnah, the Gemara opens up with the language of the Mishnah, shichruru, e boy in, e boy lo, e lo boy lo. Is this a matter of option? E boy means if he wants to, he can free him. E low boy low, if he doesn't want to free, he doesn't. V'amai, how can this matter be left to option? It should be mandatory. Why? Lisa shivcha eino yochol. The sofek eved can't marry a bondmaid. A real eved could marry a bondmaid, so he has a marriage option, but he can't. Bas chorin eino yochol, nor can he marry a girl, a regular Jewish girl, because of the possibility that he's a slave. The bondmaid he can't marry because of the possibility that he's really a Kohen. Omar Rava, Amo. So rather, the understanding of the Mishnah is as follows. Kofin oison umeshacharin ze eze. The court will force them to free one another. And the Mishnah also said, Noisnim aleim choymrei kohanim v'choymrei yisraelim. We impose upon them the stringencies of kahuna and the stringencies of Yisrael. Lamai hilchisa, what halachic bearing does this comment have? Omar af papa, the halachic implications regard the following. And here we have a phrase marking, so you'll note that it's a line and a half to communicate the idea. Leminchosam nikmetzes kemintchas Yisrael, v'eino neecheles kemintchas kehanim. Translated, it means that a meal offering brought by either one of them will need to have a kemitza done. A kemitza is a handful taken off separately, separating a handful of the meal offering, which is the normal way of dealing with a mincha brought by a non-kohen. A handful is taken off, and that handful is offered on the altar. This, by the way, in contrast to a kohen meal offering, there is no handful taken off, but rather it is put entirely into the fire. So the kohen meal offering doesn't have a handful removal requirement. So the because we're in doubt as to the identity of each one of these people that got mixed up at birth, so the there is a necessity to take off the handful on the side of its being brought by a non-kohen. And the other point, v'eino ne'echeles kemincha's kehanim. The balance, we call the shirayim, after the handful is removed, will not be eaten in accordance with its kohen identity. As we said before, a kohen mincha is put entirely into the fire. In this case, we couldn't do that, but we're not going to allow the balance to be eaten, which would be the a normal procedure with a minchas Yisrael. In this case, the balance will not be eaten. Okay, so then what is to be done? Hakoimitz korov biatzmo, the handful is offered by itself, put into the fire. Vashirayim kraven biatzmon, and the shirayim are also they're offered, but by themselves, separately. The Gemara asks, how can you allow the shirayim to be put onto the altar, to be put into the fire of the altar? Ikri kan. Can we not refer this as kol shemi menu liishim harehu beval taktiru? This is a principle when it comes to sacrifices, that when the necessary part of a sacrifice was put into the fire, that's mimenu liishim. Liishim is the plural form of word eish, means the fire. But anything, any sacrifice from whom the necessary fire part has been offered, so that the fires, the section of the korban that is due to be put in the fire has been put in the fire, harei hu b'baktatiru, that balance, that which remains, cannot be put into the fire. It's forbidden to put into the fire. The pasuk says, lo saktiru mimenu ishe lashem, do not offer from it, from the balance, do not offer it on the altar as an offering. So that when you analyze this particular meal offering on the grounds that it is a minchas Yisrael, so the handful was put into the fire. How can you put the balance into the fire? And yet, that's what Rav Papa answered. The balance is put into the fire. Omar Rav Yehuda, braid Rav Shimon ben Pasi. Demasik lehu l'shum etzim k'Rebbe Elazar. Demasik literally means we put it up into the fire. We burn it. Masik also it can mean hasoka, which has to do with burning things. But here, that's essentially what it means, that we put it up onto the altar to be burnt. And it is put there with fuel intention. The pasuk that we read from the Rashi and the halacha that says kol shemimenu lishem arev v'bal taktiru, that is a function primarily of what intention you have. If your intention is to put the balance of a sacrifice after the designated section was put into the fire, and you want to put the balance also as an offering, that's what's forbidden. But if your intention is to put it into the fire as fuel, you're not intending for it to be a sacrifice or a sacrificial offering, you're intending it to be added fuel, that's okay. So that what we have accomplished here is the balance isn't going to be eaten, but it's going to be dealt with in a duly honorable fashion by being put onto the altar in the fire. And at the same time, I'm not violating Kol Shemi Menu Lishim Arei Babak Tektiru, because as we said, that was a function of frame of mind, of intent. And as long as your intent is for fuel purposes, then it's okay. And that is in accordance with Rebbe Lozar Desanyo, and we have a source for that. Rebbe Lozar Omer, L'reach Nichoyach I Atomale. The Pasuk had said, V'el HaMizbeach Lo Yalu L'reach Nichoyach. This information you can find in the Rashi. That Pasuk comes on the heels of the Lo Satiru Menu Yishel Hashem, and it goes on there to say, you don't put it onto the altar for reach nichoach purpose. Reach nichoach literally means a pleasant aroma, but it has a sacrificial connotation. So that you can't put it on the mizbeach for sacrificial purposes. Aval atomale l'shum eitzim. The Pasuk wasn't restricting that, in Rebbe Lozar's opinion. The Pasuk was restricting simply putting the balance of the sacrifice for sacrificial purposes. But for few purposes, that's okay. The Gemara continues and saying that this answer and explanation to for the Mishnah Ha-Nicha works out well, L'Rebbe Lozar, Ela L'Rabbonon Mai Iko L'Meimar, but according to the Rabbonon, who disagree with the comment made by Rebbe Lozar over there from the source in which it's quoted. So what option do you have? In other words, the Rabbonon who disagree with Rebbe Lozar do not accept this idea of putting it on the altar for fuel purposes. Rashi gives the background to that particular machlokes. The machlokis between Rebbe Lozar and the Chachamim arose in a case where limbs of animal sacrifices got mixed up, where chatos limbs, a sin offering, is a type of sacrifice which is to be eaten by Kohanim after the blood is sprinkled, and those limbs got mixed up with olah limbs. An olah is a type of animal sacrifice that is completely burnt. So what are you to do with the mix-up of limbs? So Rebbe Lozar had said, and this is all found in Rashi, that you put them all on the Mizbeach, and you express the following intent, that the Chatos limbs that are there, I want them to be consumed by the fire as fuel. The Chachomim don't accept that approach. They say that the limbs are to be left off the Mizbeach until a certain amount of time goes by, until the next day arrives, and then they're taken out to a separate place where they are burnt, but not on the Mizbeach. So, according to the Rabbonin that don't accept this idea of, we'll say, the fuel option, what are we going to do with our meal offering of this Safek Kohen, Safek non-Kohen? The Gemara answers, the Ovid law to Rebbe Lozar Rebbe Shimon. The process over here will be in accordance with his teaching, Rebbe Lozar Rebbe Shimon. The Sanya, he has a Tanaic source that's taught in the context of a sin offer, a meal sin offering. It's called a Minchas Chote. Minchas, a meal offering. Chote, a sinner. And there's a situation, then, and Rashi quotes this, where a person entered the Beis HaMikdash in a state of defilement. He has to bring a sin offering, and if he happens to be impoverished, so the Torah provides an option for him to bring a minchas chote, a meal offering, which is much cheaper, much less expensive than an animal offering. But due to his financial status he's entitled to bring that. And if the offender happened to be a Kohen, so then this is a departure from the standard meal offering that a Kohen would bring. We mentioned before that a standard meal offering brought by a Kohen, there is no handful that is taken. But in the case of a sin offering meal sacrifice, a minchas chote brought by a Kohen, there it is different. It is treated in a certain respect like a meal offering brought by a Yisrael. And what is that? So a meal offering brought by a Yisrael, a handful is separated and put into the fire. So too in the sin offering of a Kohen. However, with regard to the balance, in the case of a Yisrael, so it's eaten, but not so in the case of a sin meal offering brought by a Kohen. There, the balance is burnt. I should say that what I just said is in accordance with one Tanaic opinion. That's in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. However, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, he says that after the meal offering, the handful is burnt on the Mizbeach, the balance is scattered or is placed on the floor of the Azorah. There's something called the Beis HaDeshen, and that is a spot right next to the ramp of the Mizbeach where there were other items that were placed there without getting into too many details. And with regard to the balance of the meal offering, in this case of the confusion, so the Rabbonon will agree that the balance is to be placed there on the Beis HaDeshen. The Rabbonon will argue with Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon in the case of the Minchas Kohen, the Minchas Chote of a Kohen. But that's not our topic. We're not dealing with the Minchas Chote of a Kohen, but we are dealing with a Mincha brought by a Sofek Kohen. So that in this case, the Rabbonon will agree that you can place it at the Beis HaDeshen. So I know that we gave a lot of background, and you can find all of this in the Rashi. But for our purposes, we're trying to focus in on what the solution for our situation is. After all, the Rabbonon rejected the idea of putting these things on the Mizbeach with fuel intention, so what option is left? So the Gemara continues. We said that they will deal with our Sofek Kohen regular meal offering. As Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says with regard to a Minchas Kohen. And it says in the Gemara, Desanya Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, Omer HaKoimetz Korav Liatzmo, the handful of the Minchas Chote of the Kohen is offered by itself, Vashirayim Mispazrin Al Beis HaDeshen. And the balance is put at the Beis HaDeshen, which is the spot on the temple courtyard floor near the ramp of the altar. V'afilu Rabbonon lo pligi ole de Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon elo b'minchas chotei shel kohanim. Even the Rabbonon expressed their dissenting opinion, but that's only over there with regard to the minchas chotei of the kohen, because they are of the opinion that the shirayim there are to be offered on the mizbeach. However, when you're dealing with our confusion issue, there they agree. Aval hacha, the Gemara continues, afilu rabbonan modu. Even the rabbonan will agree that maybe it's not a kohen, maybe it's a zar, because we're dealing with a confusion situation. And if it's a zar, the shirayim are total shirayim and cannot be put on the mizbeach. So that it might be in the case of the Minchas Chote, the Shirayim would be put into the fire, but not in the case of our confusion situation, because maybe he's not a Kohen at all. And here the Rabbana will agree with Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon that the balance is placed on the Beis Hadeshen. The new Mishnah is introduced by a topic heading on the side, Dinei Mi Shenolad Sofek Ben Tisha L'Rishon Sofek Ben Zayin L'Sheni. We have a situation of a woman who married a second man without waiting the required 3 months between marriages, so that a case of a Yevama, for example, her husband died, leaving no children. Little did she know that she was possibly, and here I emphasize, possibly pregnant. Whatever the case is, she married a second man, and the Yavam, that is, she did Yibum, and 7 months later, she bore a child. Well, is this child a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband? She didn't wait the required 3 months in order to do it, determine whether she was pregnant or not. So maybe she was pregnant, but it wasn't recognizable. She married only after 2 months since his demise. 7 months later, she gives birth, so maybe it is a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband. On the other hand, it might be a 7-month pregnancy from the Yavam. Hainu ha-mikre she'imo lo shuaso gimel chadoshim hadrushim la'koras herayon ben gever rishon le'gever sheni. That's the case of a woman who did not wait the required 3 months that are necessary in order to recognize whether there is a pregnancy, the time required between first husband and second husband. So we now continue with our Mishnah. Mishalo shuaso acharbayim l'shlosha chadoshim, a woman who did not wait the required 3 months between the first husband and the second husband. And when we're talking about Yavama, he could be referred to as the Yavam. V'niseis, and then she married. She married the Yavam, the Yolda, and she gave birth. V'en yodua im ben tisha l'rishon im ben shiva l'achron. She gave birth 7 months after her second marriage to the second husband. We're not sure whether it's a 9-month from the first and the first one is his father, or it's a 7-month pregnancy and the second man is his father. Hoyu lo bonim min horishon ubonim min hasheni. This woman, has children from the first and from the second. Cholzin velo miabnin. We should pause for just a moment and clarify that even though we mentioned up till this point the issue of a woman who did not wait 3 months, and in the case of a first husband that died leaving no children, we would be dealing with her marrying a Yavam. The issue at hand regarding Yibum is not focusing so much on the woman herself, but we're going to be focusing on the child in the eventual situation of his marrying and dying without children, the suffolk and the dinim of Yibum regarding his widow. So, in the Mishnah, we had read Hoyu lo bonim min horishon ubonim min hasheni. We have a little diagram where you can see the woman and ish one and ish two on either side. These are the husbands that she had, and she married ish number two prematurely. She didn't wait the required 3 months. And as a result, she produced a suffix. You can see the suffix in the underneath the woman. However, the husbands that she had been married to had their own definite children. So that the suffix, on either side, there are potential brothers. Are the brothers from the first man, or are those his brothers, the children that the second man had? So that in a situation like this, where there are bonim from the first man, his own children, and that he had with this woman, and bonim from the sheni, from the second man, that he had with this woman, Holtzin velo miabmin. All that can be done with regard to the suffolk in the event that he dies leaving no children. He had married a woman and died leaving no children. Who are his brothers from the common father? Yibum is done only, the marriage of the widow is only done when there is a surviving brother from the same father, but we don't know who his father is. So the children that Mr. 1 had with the woman and children that Mr. 2 had with the woman, with the mother of the suffolk, those are brothers, but it's a suffolk, it's a doubt whether they're brothers from the same father or not. So, as we said, the only option is for them to do chalitza, to release the widow of that suffolk, as we said, when he dies, leaving no children. V'chein hu lohem choletz velo miyabim. Likewise, in the event that they die, leaving no children, and the suffolk survives, so he cannot marry their widows, because he might be a brother only from the same mother, not from the same father. So he would do chalitza, but not yibum. We continue on the top of Amud Beis. This is the same situation, but a bit more elaborate. And we're going to have to learn this section alongside with a new chart that we've provided. Hoyu lo achim min horishon v'achim min hasheni shaloi me'oisoi ha'aim. So first we look at the chart, the diagram, where you see in the middle of the first row of the diagram, you see the Isha. This is the woman, and she had been married to Baal number 1 and did not wait after him and eventually married Baal number 2. Underneath the woman, you have a suffix. Is he from Mr. 1 or Mr. 2? But in addition to that, Mr. 1 had another wife and produced a son from that other wife. Likewise, Mr. 2 had been married to a woman, and there is a son from that woman. So that, as far as the suffolk is concerned, they are possible brothers, but not through the suffolk's mother. It's clear that they're not brothers from the mother. At best, they are suffolk brothers through a father. Again, emphasis from a father, not from the mother. So that's what the Mishnah is describing, and saying he has brothers from the first and brothers from the second, it really means they're suffolk brothers. But shalome oisei ha'em. So now, with regard to yibum, let us say that those people die, the ben of the first man and the ben of the second man, who do not come from the suffolk's mother. So we say hu choletz umiyabim. He can do either chalitza. He can even do yibum. Now, why is that he can do even yibum? Because, as we said, there is no doubt regarding those fellows' mother. Their mother is not his mother, so that there's no doubt here about them being brothers from a common mother. At best, or at worst, however you want to look at things, they are brothers through a common father. Either it's a brother through a common father, or it's someone that's not related to him whatsoever. Therefore, if it's not related to him whatsoever, he's entitled to marry the widow. There's no relationship there. If it is his brother from a common, if the ben on either side of this diagram, it is in fact a brother from a common father, so that's good reason enough for doing yibum. So this is describing a case where they die, the ben from Mr. 1 and the ben from Mr. 2. The haim, let us say the suffolk dies, leaving no children. So what is the rule? The surviving brother from a common father is to do yibum. But who is that? So we don't know who it is. So we say as follows: Echad choletz v'echad mi'abem. One will do chalitza first, and what will that accomplish? If the one that is doing chalitza is the actual surviving brother, so he has released her. So Mr. Two, the second one, can marry her. If the one that does chalitza is not related whatsoever, so the second one is the actual brother from common father, so he's accomplishing yibum. So if you, as long as you preserve this order of doing first, of one of those bens doing chalitza, and the other ben then marrying her if he should so desire, that's fine. Hoya, we continue in the Mishnah with a double underline that highlights two cases on the side under the Mivneh heading. These are Efshoriot Shonot Legabi Mi Hoyu Habailim V'Totzoseim. Different possibilities as far as who those husbands were and the results. So we're talking again of the Isha that didn't wait the 3 months required. Hoya Echod Yisrael V'Echod Kain. If one of the husbands was Yisrael and the other husband was a Kain, the Suffolk then that's born, he doesn't know who his father is. Is he therefore a Kohen or is he a non-Kohen? Now the Mishnah goes on with an extensive list of rules that apply to this individual as a result of the doubt. No Seisha Ruya L'Kohen. He is limited in the kind of women that he can choose as a mate, a woman that is fit, is qualified to marry a real Kohen. That would mean that this Suffolk, being that maybe he's a Kohen, cannot marry a divorcee, for example. He cannot marry a convert, for example. What else? V'ein metame lemesim. He might be a Kohen, so he cannot defile himself to the dead, as is expected of Kohanim, to refrain from, desist from defilement to the dead. V'im nitma. If he deliberately exposed himself to defilement, Eino Sofeg Esrarboim, he's not going to be subject to the lashes. Arboim is a reference to 40. It's 39 lashes. The number 40 is used often in Chazal, but it means 39 lashes for someone who deliberately violated a negative command of the Torah. In this case, he's not a Kohen, so that when there is doubt, you cannot issue lashes in under doubtful circumstances. Maybe he's not a Kohen to begin with. Eino ochel betruma. He's not allowed to eat truma. Truma is restricted to a Kohen, not to a non-Kohanim, and maybe he is not a Kohen, so he can't eat truma. V'im ochal, eino mishalim keren v'choymesh. If he does eat truma, he is not going to have to pay the type of payment that a non-Kohen would make, namely principal plus a fifth. He can claim, until you prove that I am not a Kohen, you can't extract from me payments. Money, there's a rule applying to payments, compensation. Hamotzi mechaver olvaran. When you want to take money out or payment out away from someone, the burden of proof is upon you, the one who's trying to extract the payment. V'eino cholek al hagored. He will not get a portion of truma at the granary. Umocher hatruma vadomim shelo. If he has his own field, he'll tithe the truma. He won't eat it himself, as we already said, but he has the right to sell it and keep the money. If he were a definite non-Kohen, he wouldn't be allowed to sell it. He would have to give it away. But on the side that he's a Kohen, the truma would belong to him. However, on the side that he's not a Kohen, he can't eat it. So we say as follows: he can sell it and keep the money. V'eino cholek b'kotshei kotshim. V'ein nosnin lo es hakotchim. These are points, by the way, that we have learned in the past, in the recent past, that he doesn't receive portions of sacrifices that are offered in the Beis HaMikdash, and he is not given sacrifices by others with the intention of his offering them. V'ein motzin es shelo miyodo. When he himself, this Sofek himself, has the need of bringing a sacrifice. We cannot force him to give it to the current service group that's serving in the Beis HaMikdash, on the grounds that he might be a Kohen, and a Kohen has the right to offer his own sacrifices. In this case, he won't be able to do that, but he can determine whom he wants to offer it. Upoter min azrael chayim v'keiva, and he's exempt from this animal form of animal tithe, that when a person slaughters his own meat for personal consumption, he gives the arm, the cheeks, and the keva, the stomach, to a Kohen. If this Suffolk, though, is slaughtering his own meat for personal consumption, he will not separate these parts to give to a Kohen. He himself might be a Kohen. And this has nothing to do, by the way, with sacrificial consumption. This is talking about meat that you slaughter in the privacy of your home for your own personal consumption. Ubechoro yehe roeh ad sheyistoev. And if he has a firstborn animal born in his flock or his herd, if he were a non-Kohen, he would have to give that firstborn animal to a Kohen, who would bring it to the Beis HaMikdash and offer it as a special Bechor sacrifice. In this case, though, he himself might be a Kohen. So he will keep the animal, however, until it develops a blemish. It has sanctity, so he can't slaughter it immediately. But what he can do is he can have it graze until it's yistoyev, means until it develops a blemish, at which point he would be able to slaughter it outside the Beis HaMikdash for his own personal use. V'noisin olov chomrei kayhanim v'chomrei yisraelim. And we apply to him the stringencies of kayhanim and those of non-Kohanim. And that expression we saw earlier today in our shiur, and we had said that referred to the laws of a meal offering that this person would bring. The Gemara opens up with a reference to what we saw on the third line from the top of the page. We have an arrow on the side which you can align with that which you saw earlier. And we emphasized at that point, we were using the chart where the Suffolk died leaving no children. What is to be done with regard to her widow? So we said there that the bonim from the definite bonim from the Baal 1 and Baal 2, so one will do chalitza and the other will do ibum if he should so desire. The order was important, as we emphasized. Davka michlatz v'hoder yibumi. First, the widow of the suffolk is to be participant in chalitza, and then ibum. Avo yibumi b'rei shalo, but to before chalitza done, to initially engage in ibum, that would be forbidden. The kapoga b'yivom alashuk, because the one who is going to marry that widow, the widow of the suffolk, does he know for sure that he is a brother of the suffolk from the common father? No, he doesn't know that. He might be an outsider, and marrying her would be an isur of marrying a woman who was bound to a real yavam. So, in order to solve that problem, chalitz is done first. The chalitza, we're saying, would be done by possibly the real surviving brother, and that would free her to enable her to marry the other fellow. And if the other fellow is the real brother from common father, then great, then that's the mitzvah of yibum. But only if it's done after chalitza by the other one. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have on the side the topic heading. Dino Shel Shmuel. You'll notice that Shmuel has a firebox marking, one of the rare type markings in Gemara markings. But we use this marking when either a shita, a name, or an idea that will preoccupy the Gemara for a long time appears. In this case, Shmuel's din will keep us busy, so to speak, till the bottom of the Omid. So on the side, we've written Dino Shel Shmuel Kohen Eino Roy La Voida. Elim Kain Yodea Mihu Aviv. a Kohen is not fit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash unless he knows specifically with assuredness who his father is. The Rabbonon Gozru, the Rabbonon imposed a restriction. Shekoyin Shenolad Miisha Pnuya Shebole Kamo Anoshim Shekulam Kohanim. A woman, an unmarried woman, that happened to have intimacy with a number of men who were all Kohanim. We know then for sure that the child is a Kohen. Ain Beno Kosher Labuda. And nevertheless, the child is not permissible or not permitted to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So we now turn to the Gemara. Omar Shmuel. Asora Kohanim Oimdimu. Pirish Echod Mehem Uboal. Havlad Shtuki. There are 10 Kohanim standing around, and one of them had intimacy with the woman, and she bore a child. The child is called Shtuki. Now, the term Shtuki is going to be analyzed by the Gemara. We should point out that the term Shtuki appears in other sugyas, primarily in the fourth and last parak of Kiddushin, which deals with halachas concerning yichus, whom a person can marry. In this case, we can say with assuredness that the child is kosher in the sense that he can marry a woman from the general Jewish population, from the rank and file pure Jewish descent women. However, there is still an element of doubt, we said, regarding who his father is. We know that his father is a Kohen, but we don't know specifically which man. So the Gemara asks, in this case, my Shtuki. What do you mean by the term Shtuki? If you're not familiar with the word from beforehand, the word Shtuki has as its root Shosat, means silence. So there's an element of silencing here. But regarding what? My Shtuki. That we do not entitle him to receive an inheritance portion from his father's properties. Pshita, that's obvious. Who knows who his father is? In other words, so Shmuel doesn't have to tell us the Vlad Shtuki with regard to something that is so obvious. It means we silence him, we separate him, we keep him away from the laws of kahuna, specifically regarding practicing or serving in the Beis HaMikdash. I said laws of kahuna, that's a little too broad, because he is definitely a Kohen. He won't be able to defile to the dead. He'll be entitled to eat truma, but he cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. My timer, why is that? Omar Krov, the Pasuk says, V'hoysa loy ulzaroy acharov. This is a Pasuk that is interpreted as follows. Bo'inon zaroy miyuchos acharov olekun. In order for a Kohen to merit serving in the Beis HaMikdash, it has to be a case of a Kohen who can identify from where he comes. A Kohen who knows who his father was. Maskif lo Rav Popa. Elo me'ata. Well, according to this reasoning, Gabi Avram dichtiv. Regarding Avram, Avram Ovinu, the Pasuk said, Liyos l'cho le'lokim u'lezaracho acharecha. If the term Lazarocho Acharecho is Lazaro Achrov, these terms, if they mean some type of, let's say, halachic restriction, what in the world could it mean in that context where the Almighty will be unto you as a God and to the children that follow you? What's the warning over there? Hochi Ko'omar Lei. The following is what was said. Lo sinsav oivedes kechovim v'shivcha. Do not marry an idolatress or a bondmaid. The lo lezil zaracho basra. So that your offspring don't end up following her. So that in the case of the pasuk you find by Avraham Avinu, you in fact find in this element of restriction or warning in that phrase. Children born from a bondmaid or from an idolatress, from a Gentile woman, are not Jewish. They take on the identity of the mother. So therefore, the children, the boys born from the descendants of Avraham, are warned not to marry those that will lead to idolatry. Meisvei. The Gemara now introduces a Tanaic source. It's a very short quote. You can see the section in a frame. This involves a case of Yibum done within 3 months of the death of the first man. And 7 months after the Yibum, a child is born. So that we don't know if this child is a son of the first husband, and she was pregnant 2 months already before she did the Yibum, so that it's a case where she should not have married the brother whatsoever. In fact, marriage to the brother, if this was a 9-month pregnancy, marriage to the brother would lead to children that are mamzerim. On the other hand, maybe it's a 2nd month, a 7-month pregnancy coming from the second man, the brother of her deceased husband. Now, this woman who didn't wait the required 3 months in order to identify, in order to determine whether she was pregnant or not, she has a couple of children with the Yavam. So the source now says, Rishon Roy Leos Klingov, the first child born is fit to be even the high priest, the Kohen Gadol. Why? Well, if he's a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband was, these are, we're dealing with brothers that are Kohanim. So the father was the first husband, and the child is a legitimate child. And if it was a 7-month pregnancy from the second husband, because the first husband did not impregnate her whatsoever, and she was fit to be a Yavoma, so he's a kosher child from that standpoint. So the first child she has with the second husband is kosher. Not only that, but it says here he's fit to be a Kohen Gadol. But now in the context of our discussion, the Habo Inon Zaro Miuchas Achra Valeka, what about Shmuel's halacha that we, in order to serve in the Beis Hamikdash, to be considered high priest, you'd have to know for sure who your father is. So the Gemara answers, Zaro Miuchas Achrov de Rabbonan. This concept of one having to know who his father is before he can serve in the Beis Hamikdash is a rabbinic concept. Ukras machto bi alma. And the pasuk that was cited before, v'hoisa loy u'zaro achrov, that pasuk is simply a reference point. Asmachta bi'alma. It's not a formal source, but it's a reference point for the rabbanon when they formulated their halacha. V'chigozer rabbanon biznus. The rabbanon instituted their restriction in the case of harlotry in znus. That's the case we saw before with Shmuel, who appeared in the firebox with ten men standing around that were all Kehanim, and one of them decided to have a little fling on the side with this woman. That is the situation in which the rabbis restricted the son, the child born from that non-marriage relationship, restricted him from serving in the Beis Hamikdash. Benisuin lo gozer rabbanan. But in a case of a formal marriage, true, there's this element of doubt, but the rabbis didn't impose their restriction. And you'll notice now a new marking, and on the side we have a mivne, structural note. The house that will appear will also appear in an opposite direction later on the page. This represents a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give and take, back and forth type discussion. The tip facing up represents a kushya, a question. Ha'im be'emes gozru b'znus. Did they really impose restrictions regarding znus? And the inverted house represents tshuva, a response. shortly we'll see another marking, a triangle will appear, and in this upcoming section of Gemara, it represents Shlavei Birur, stages of clarification, Kedei Lefaresh HaMishpat, in order to explain a phrase, Mishelo Shoaso Achar Baila, a woman who did not wait following her Baal. Generally speak, the word Baal means husband. However, here we're going to have to be a little more open-minded as we go through the Gemara. So our Gemara continues with a question after having answered. On behalf of Shmuel, we said that the Rabbonin imposed their restriction, which is the halacha that Shmuel was citing in the case of Znus. So the Gemara asks, Ubeznus mi gozu Rabbonin, in the case of the harlotry type behavior, did the rabbis really impose a restriction on the child as far as serving in the Beis HaMikdash v'hatanan? Our Mishnah says, you should note, by the way, that we're beginning here a long question. It said in our Mishnah, Mishalo Shuaso Achar Bailo Shloisha Chadoshim V'Niseis V'Yolda, a woman who did not wait after Baala 3 months, and within the 3 months she married a second man. My Achar Baila, what does that mean, that phrase Achar Baala? Ilemo Achar Misas Baila, that she didn't wait after the death of her husband. Emo Seifa, you would continue reading the continuation of the Tanaic source, and it says in the continuation of the Tanaic source, Hu onein aleim v'heim oninin olav. It just occurred to me, this happens rarely, but it does. It can happen in our Gemara markings here, that there is a section of the Mishnah that we did not read earlier. We had read before till the end of the third wide line of the text on this page, but we didn't continue reading the end of the Mishnah. So it's better late than never, as they say. Let us go to the fourth wide line. There's a double underline at the beginning of the line, and simply complete the Mishnah. And this quote that we just read in the Gemara is coming from there. We spoke in our Mishnah about a woman who did not wait the required 3 months between Mr. 1 and Mr. 2. And it says in the Mishnah, Yushneim Kohanim, if both men were Kohanim, who oinein aleim v'heim oinein olav, in the event that a death takes place, so when a death takes place before the burial, the relatives are called an onein. And there are a number of halachas that apply to someone in that state. In fact, it involves the exemption from certain mitzvahs. So if both husbands were kohanim, in the event that they die, so the child who's a sofik, he doesn't know which one is his father, so he will be an onein upon their death. And heim onein olav, if he dies, if the sofik dies, so these men will practice aninus in the case of his death. Hu eino metamin lohem v'heim einon metamin lo. Even though they were both kohanim, however, and we know that kohanim are allowed to and maybe even required to defile themselves upon the death of a close relative, and here you're dealing with father and son. Nevertheless, we're not sure who the father is, or from that's from the son's perspective. The son doesn't know who his father is, and they don't know if this is their actual son. So since there's this doubt, and they know for sure that they are kohanim, so there can be no defilement, death defilement over here. That's in their death, he cannot defile to them, and they, in the suffix's death, they cannot defile to him. There's another section, there's a section in the Mishnah that we have in brackets, because that which you see in brackets isn't necessarily limited to the case of there being kohanim, the two men, two husbands or fathers being kohanim. but it's applicable to all cases of doubt. It says, "Hu eino yoresh oson." When these men, the father, the suffolk father died, the doubtful father died, so he will not inherit. If they have their own children, so he can't inherit from them, and the rather, but their own real children will inherit. Avolheim yorshin oso. They will be able to inherit from him. The Rashi on this says, "Hu eino yoresh oson diyorshin matchin oisoi." In the event that one of those fathers die, the other children that each one of those fathers may have will push him away, saying, "You're not our brother. You're not entitled to a portion of our father's estate." Vehein yorshin oso debim akev al yodon. When the suffolk dies, leaving property, these two groups will of children from Mr. 1 and Mr. 2 will inherit him. V'havu momon amuta b'suffolk. As far as the real heir, it's not clear, and that's called money that's lying in a state of doubt. V'cholkin bein shneim. The two groups of sons that Mr. 1 have and Mr. 2 have will divide this suffolk's property. The Mishnah goes on to say, "Upotur al makoso v'akiloso shelzeh v'shelzeh." If the suffolk hits or curses these men who are possible fathers, whereas in the case of a real father-son relationship, a son who hits his father or curses his father is subject to capital punishment. Not so over here, because there is this element of doubt. So that if this suffolk hits one of those men, or he curses one of those men, it might not be his father. It might be, it's a terrible thing to do, to hit someone, to curse them, but we wouldn't subject them to the formal capital punishment. Oile b'mishmoro shelzeh v'shelzeh v'eino cholek. Now here we're going to just simply translate. It would mean that oile b'mishmoro means he would appear in the service group. We're dealing with Kohanim here. Notice the brackets, and this, we're going back to the rules of Kohanim. He would serve in the service group of Mr. One. Maybe that's his father, so he's part of that weekly, twice weekly, twice week annual. There's twice a year a Kohen would serve as part of a service group for 1 week in the Beis Hamikdash. So twice weekly, I should say 2 weeks during a year, he would serve in the mishmar of each one of those fathers. The eino cholek, but he doesn't get a portion of sacrifices. Im hayu shneim b'mishmar echad, notel chelek echad. If both of these husbands, Mr. 1 and Mr. 2, who are the doubtful father, if they were in the same service group, so then the suffolk would get one portion. If the two fathers were not in the same service group, so the other members of that service group would say, "You're not part of our group, so you don't get any portion." But in the case where the two fathers were in the same service group, so since sacrifices were divided amongst the service group, in this case, he is definitely a part of the service group, just simply not knowing if he's from Father 1 or Father 2. So now let's go back to the Gemara, where we'll just repeat the question that we're dealing with. Shmuel said that in the case of znus, of a harlotry type relationship between a kohen and a woman, a pnuya, an unmarried woman, where an unmarried woman had relations with a man that was definitely a kohen, but we don't know which man it is, so the child is not entitled to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. So now we are asking, is that really so? And we cited a case of a woman who did not wait 3 months between Baal number one and Baal number two. And what does that mean, Achar Baila? She didn't wait Achar Baila. We saw that in our Gemara text where the dashed underline phrase appears at the beginning of our long question. And we're asking, does that mean achar misas bailah? A woman who didn't wait 3 months after the death of her husband? Well then, emo seifa. Hu onein alehem veheim oininin olof. The sofek will practice aninus in the event of their death, and they will practice aninus, which are the laws that apply to someone whose close relative died before the burial of the deceased. They will practice aninus over his death. We're dealing with the sofek fathers regarding the sofek child. Bishlama hu onein alehem mishkachas law benisuin desheni velikud atzamos dekamo. The idea of the sofek observing aninus regarding the death of those men, that we can explain in the case of the second man dying, maybe that was his father, or the gathering of the bones for reinterment of the first one during that time where bones are gathered for reinterment, so the child would practice laws of mourning. Ela heim oninin olav. The word heim, we dashed under, means they. That means husband number one and husband number two. They will practice aninus over him, over the suffix death. Heishi mishkachas law. How can you have these two men practicing aninus over him? Kamo ha misle. The first one is already dead. We have a woman who we said had been married to Mr. One, and then she married Mr. Two within 3 months of what? Of the, well, the assumed death of the first husband. So how can you have a situation where the two men are going to be observing aninus over the death of the safek? The first man is already dead. Isn't that so? The Ela Begrusha. Oh, the woman who didn't wait 3 months after Mr. One before marrying Mr. Two. Mr. One didn't die. Mr. One divorced her. Umay achar baila. What does it mean when we say that she didn't wait 3 months achar baila? Achar get baila. Up till now we thought the woman didn't wait 3 months after the death of her husband. Not so. She didn't wait 3 months after the divorce that he granted her. And this divorcee then went ahead and married a kohen within 3 months of the divorce from the first husband. Okay. So then, with that in mind, the two men could very well be alive when the Safek son dies. So that would enable us to make sense of the source, the Mishnah, that said, Heim Oninin Olav. Emo Seifa. Well, let's continue reading that our Mishnah. It said in the Seifa regarding a case where the two were Kehanim, the two husbands were Kehanim. It says, Who... Ein mitame lohem veheim einon mitamen loy. Bishlamo hein ein mitamen lo. That I can understand, that they are not mitame to him. L'chumra. That's a restriction. Neither one. They're both kohanim. So they don't know for sure if it's their son. So we impose a restriction. Do not defile in the case that the suffix dies. Dechol chad v'chad, each one of them, their kohanim, dilmolav brehu. It might not be their son, and a kohen cannot be metame to a non-close relative. Elohu ein metame Elohim. It also said in the Mishnah that he, the Safek, cannot be metameh to them. Am I? Why is there such a restriction? Bishlamah l'sheni lo l'tama le. I understand that to the second man, this suffek should not be metame. Why? He might be a kohen. He might be the son of the first man. The first man who divorced the woman, and she married within 3 months of the divorce. But this suffek might be that man's child. So, if he's the child of the first man, the child is a real kohen, and he can't be metame to the second man when he dies, when the second father, if you will, the suffek father dies. He can't be, that might not be his father. Ela lo rishon letam litmile. As far as the death of the first husband, why can't this suffek be metame to him? Mimonavshach, either way you look at things, this suffek should be allowed to be metame to the first husband, the first man, the person who divorced his mother. Mimonavshach, either way you look at it, ibrehu shapikum metamele. If the suffek is the son of the first man, so then his defilement to him is fine. A kohen is allowed to defile himself to his father. And if this suffek is the son of the second man, now what was that second man? Don't forget, we're talking about a section of Mishnah where they were both kohanim. You have a kohen who married a divorcee, because we set up the case of achar bailo mean after the get bailo, and the second man was a kohen who married a divorcee. If he, the suffek, in fact was a son of that second man, Shapir ko metame le, it would be okay for him to metame to the second man. Meaning, even if we're saying if he is the son of the second man, he could be metame to him. The cholovu, this he could be metame. That is to the first. Shapir ko metame le means to the first man. We're asking, why can't he metame to the first man? If he's the son of the second fellow, so the first man, it's not his father, but if he's the son of the second man, he is also not a kohen. He's called a cholol. A kohen who marries someone forbidden to him, like a grusha, the child produced from that forbidden relationship is a cholol. A cholol does not have the laws of kahuna upon him. So he doesn't have the tumah restrictions upon him. So if he is the son of the second man, why should he not be allowed to metame, to go to the funeral of the first husband? So once again, in the Mishnah it said that he cannot metame to them. Why not? Why can't he metame to the... When he says he cannot metame to them, it means he cannot metame to either one of them. So we understand why he can't be metame to the second man, because this suffek might be the son of the first man, and the son would be a regular kohen. But if he's the son of the second man, why can he not metame upon the death of the first husband? This child, if he were the son of the second man, would not have the laws of kahuna upon him. So the Mishnah cannot be learned in terms of her being the mother being a divorcee, being divorced from the first man and marrying a second man within 3 months. Ela lav biznus. See, if you just look back over the triangles, we set up the case of Mises bylaw. She didn't wait after the death of a first husband. We ruled that out. The Mishnah, we attempted to set up of achar baila, meaning after the divorce she received from the first husband. We ruled that out. So what does it mean she didn't wait after baila? Elolav biznus, biznus. We're talking about an act of harlotry. Umay achar baila, achar bo'ala. When it says that she didn't wait after baila, means she didn't wait after the intimacy that she experienced with the first man. So she had intimacy, sexual intercourse with some guy interested in a fling, and she didn't wait 3 months until she entered such a relationship with some second fellow. And then a child was born 7 months after that second fling. The Katani Sefer, and it says in our Mishnah, Oyla b'mishmar shelzeh v'shelzeh. He serves in the Beis HaMikdash, in the service group of the first man, and the service group of the second man, Utiufta de Shmuel. And you can see at this point, our Gemara comes to the end of the long question. So you're dealing with an active harashi. A person doesn't know who his father is, and he is serving in the Beis HaMikdash. That would be a refutation of Shmuel. Shmuel said if a person doesn't know for sure, if a person knows that he's a Kohen, but doesn't know which man, which Kohen fathered him, he cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Our Mishnah indicates that he is able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. The inverted house represents a response. Omar Rav Shmaya b'mimaenes. Our Mishnah that gives license to his serving in the suffix serving in the Beis HaMikdash is not dealing with harlotry. It's dealing with mimaenes. What's mimaenes? Mimaenes is a reference to a minor, to a girl who's under 12. And rabbinically speaking, her mother or father are entitled to marry her to some man. From the Torah standpoint, only a father has the right to marry off his minor daughter. But rabbinically speaking, a mother or brother can marry her off to some man. The difference between the two is that when a father marries her off, that's a full-fledged marriage. In order to disband the marriage, a divorce document would be required. A formal get divorce is required. However, in the case of Mimaenes or Miun, before the girl reaches adulthood, reaches 12 years of age, she can walk out of the marriage by simply saying, I don't want to continue with him. So that is not harlotry. So we can construct the situation of a girl being with Mr. One through a rabbinic marriage and then leaving him through Miun and then marrying Mr. Two. Not waiting 3 months. 7 months later, a child is born. We don't know who the father is. So that's the case our Mishnah was referring to. Shmuel's din stands. Shmuel was talking about an act of harlotry. Here we're not dealing with harlotry. If we look in the Rashi, the first line under the Gemara text, the first wide line, b'mema'enis, li'oilam biznus lo misukma, we're not going to set up the Mishnah dealing with znus, daha posul avoda. In the case of harlotry, the child would be prohibited to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. V'lo motzi l'misni, and you wouldn't be able to teach that which the Mishnah says, oilu b'mishmoro shelzeh v'shelzeh, that he would serve in the service group of this one and that one. Ella, hechi mishkachas lo d'roya b'misa shneem, v'ein metam elohen, d'kayin koshu. How can you have a situation where the Sufik sees the death of them, the Sufik fathers, not be allowed to mitama them because he's a kohen that's kosher? B'memeinus yisoyma shemiyana b'bayla v'lo shoasa shloisha chadashim. When he says a yisoyma, that means a girl whose father already died and was married off by her father, by her mother or brother, who then refused to continue with that first man, and within 3 months she married a second man. The Gemara now asks a question. You'll notice it's a long question. Umimaenes mi kol yalda. When you're dealing with umimaenes, you're dealing with a girl who is under 12 years of age. And we're factoring in our discussion that this girl may have been impregnated and bore a child from the first man. Could that actually be, physically speaking? Does a mimaenes, which is a reference to a girl who's, chronologically speaking, a minor, can she be capable of bearing a child? V'hotoni Rav Beivai kamei de Rav Nachman. Rav Beivai taught the following Tanaic source in the presence of Rav Nachman. There's a lot of information in this source, but we're going to try to focus on the main point. and we'll do that with a dash underline. It says in this source, Shloisha Noshim Mishamshes B'moich. There are three women that are entitled to have intimacy using a contraceptive. A moch is a piece of absorbent material that the woman will insert into her body, that in the course of intimacy, the male seed will be absorbed into the moch, thereby preventing her from being impregnated from that act. Who are the three women? Titana, Muberes, and Menika. And these terms will be explained as we go on in the source, but it refers to a minor, a woman who is currently pregnant, or a woman who is nursing. We're interested in number one, in the case of Tana. Tana, what's the reason that we give this allowance for shimush b'moch, for using this absorbent material? Shemo tis'abir v'tomus. We're afraid she might become pregnant and die. Now, we dashed underline tomus because that is the key word in this source. This indicates that she isn't going to be bearing a child. Muberes, at this point, then we have, this is already less central for our discussion, but Muberes means a woman who is currently pregnant. Shemotase ubro sandal, we're afraid that she might enter, if she's already pregnant, we don't want her to enter a second pregnancy in the middle of the first pregnancy. It might crush the child. It might, a sandal is a situation where the child is flattened through the pressure of the developing second embryo. Menika, Shemo, Tigmol, Esbino, Viomus. If a woman who is currently nursing becomes pregnant, then her lactation ceases and the child that she's currently nursing will die because of its lost food supply. Now, once again, we want to emphasize here, V'ezohi Ketana. What is the case of Ketana that could become pregnant but will die? Mibas achasis reishona v'yoy mechot ad bas shtemes reishona v'yoy mechot. It's during that age, from 11 till 12. Pochos mikan o yeser alkein, less than 11, she won't become pregnant. Above 12, mishameshes kedarka, she can have intimacy in a regular fashion, veholeches, and continue that way without any chashash, any fear of death. Divrei Rebbe Meir. And truth be told, there's another opinion in this source. We're focusing right now on the information that Rebbe Meir has given us. V'chachomim omrim, achazu v'achazu mishameshes kedarka veholeches, whether she is during her 12th year, between 11 and 12, or she's one of the other cases, she has intimacy in a regular fashion without the contraceptive. Umina shemayim yirachemu, and from heaven they will have mercy. Shinama shemir psoim Hashem. The Almighty watches over the fools. He watches over those that don't have full awareness of what is going on. That is has significance, but not for our discussion. What we want to emphasize is that to explain the Mishnah in terms of mima'enes, in order to preserve the non-znus situation, we have to come up with some other explanation of what is the case of the woman between husband one and husband two, or man number one and man number two, non-znus, and yes, child being born. What's the case? Mishkachas lo bekidushei tois. The Mishnah that described the child of a kohen who's a safek and it's not znus is a case where the woman had been married to Mr. One, but conditionally. There was a kedushin. The marriage was done under conditional circumstances. And those conditions were not met. And in accordance with Rav Yudah Mar Shmuel's teaching, what we're going to see is she left Mr. One And because of the conditions not having been met, so her original marriage is viewed as not having taken place. So she can leave Mr. 1 without a get. And within 3 months, she marries Mr. 2. The woman 7 months later bears a child. Now, Mr. 1 and Mr. 2 were kohanim. So you can have a situation where this child will see the death of one and the death of two with what we saw described in the Mishnah, and we can also see how he will be in the service group of Mr. 1 and Mr. 2. What is once again we said kiddushei tos, where the marriage to the first man was done conditionally, based on Shmuel's teaching. Diomar Rav Yudah Amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Shmuel. The following was said in the name of Rabbi Yishmael. Vehi loy nisposo. That is a posuk that you find in Parshas Noso, in the second parsha of Sefer Bamidbar, which features the section dealing with the sota woman. And in the course of the psukim that deal with the sota, the woman who possibly behaved in a married woman who behaved in a reprehensible fashion, immoral fashion, an adulterous fashion, the pasuk says, "Vehi lo nitposa." In the event that she wasn't raped, the understanding of that pasuk in context is asura. She is forbidden. She's forbidden to her husband. If she was lo nitposa, literally means grabbed. So if she was not grabbed, she was not raped, means you have a married woman behaving in an adulterous fashion willingly, asura. We would infer ha nitposa muteres. If a woman was raped, so she's not forbidden to her husband. But now in this pasuk, there is a limitation expression. It says vehi. Therefore, we conclude v'yesh l'cho acheres. There's another case. Shafal pisha lo nitpasa, even though there was no rape, muteres. She is muteres. She is allowed. She is free. She is free to go from her husband. V'yezo, and which is that? What's this other case that we say that there was no rape involved, and yet there is no restriction upon the woman? Zu shekidushel kidushei tois. This is a case where her initial marriage was done with a stipulation, and the stipulation was eventually not fulfilled. Shafil b'no murkav lo aksefa, even if she has a child riding on her shoulders, meaning she had been married to Mr. 1, produced a child. She can end up leaving Mr. 1 even without a get. She's muteres. She's allowed. No restrictions upon her. Mimayenes voleches lo. Mimayenes here is apparently it's a borrowed expression. It means she refuses to be with Mr. 1 because the conditions were not met. And she goes off and marries Mr. 2. So there's no element here of znus. Therefore, we can say that the child, if both men, both Sofek fathers were Kehanim, since there's no element of harlotrous behavior, the child, who knows for sure he's a Kohen, just doesn't know who his father is, he can serve in the Beis Hamikdash. In the case of Znus, of a harlotrous type relationship, there, Shmuel's halacha will apply, that even though the child knows his father is a Kohen, but the birth was totally out of the context of marriage, so the child cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. We continue at the top of Kuf Aleph Omen Aleph. Hoyu Shneim Kohanim V'chulei. The Mishnah went on to say, well, if both men were kohanim, the child poter al makosuv al kilosu shel zeh v'shel zeh. We said there was exemption from capital punishment if the suffolk would hit or curse either one of those men. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, on the side. Shnei Brises, Bedaita Shereb Yehuda, two Tanaic sources that feature the opinion of the Tana Reb Yehuda, Behika Shnei Bebasachas, where the Suffolk hits both men at one time. Birur Mai Taimo de Madomar Potar. We're going to have to focus on a source in which Reb Yehuda is reported as saying that if he hits both men at one time, even though he is definitely, or even though he is hitting someone who is definitely his father at that moment, why is there exemption? Even though here you don't have the problem that exists in general where you have an element of doubt. Where you have an offense committed, but it's under doubtful circumstances, in order to issue a punishment, there has to be a warning beforehand. But the warning has to be in definite terms, not in doubtful terms. Once a warning is given under doubtful or in doubtful terms, so the warning is not considered sufficient in order to warrant a punishment afterwards. This, by the way, is a point that is the subject of controversy, but it comes under the heading of Hasra Sofek. Is Hasra Sofek considered a Hasra or not? So, according to the Tana, Rebbe Yehuda, we're going to present the position that, according to Rebbe Yehuda, Hasra Sofek is not considered a sufficient Hasra. Now, the sources. Tana Rabbanan. Hikazeh v'chazer v'hikazeh. The Sofek hit Mr. 1 and then hit Mr. 2. Kilelzeh v'chazer v'hikazeh. Or he cursed Mr. 1 and then cursed Mr. 2. Kilel shnei b'vasachas. He cursed both of them at once. He caused Shnei Bevasachas, or hit them both at once. Chayov. In any of these cases, according to the Tana Kama, the first opinion here, there is a capital offense. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bevasachas Chayov, Bozachas Zeh Potter. Rabbi Yehuda says that only if he hit both of them at once, he stood between the two of them, with his right hand he hit one, with his left hand he hit the other at the same moment, then he's chayav. However, bozachar zeh poter, if he hits them one after the other, so that is reason for exemption. And the reason and the explanation of that is for each preceding each act, there had to have been a hasra, a warning. But when the warning was given, the offender was told, you know, if you don't desist, you realize you're going to be hitting someone that is maybe your father. Well, the maybe there neutralizes the effectiveness of that particular warning. So we explained this first source, Bozachar Zeh Poter V'Tanya, but we have another source that says Rabbi Yehuda Omer Poter B'Vasachas. There is exemption even in a case where he hits them both at the same time. So we dashed underlined the key phrases that present a problem for us. Two lines above, Rabbi Yehuda said B'Vasachas Chayef. In this source, it says B'Vasachas is Poter. The Gemara says, Trei Tanoi Valiba the Rebbe Yehuda. There are two later Tanaic points of view regarding what did Rebbe Yehuda really say. So that's the controversy here as far as what did Rebbe Yehuda really say. My time all demand the potar. What is the reason behind this second statement or second presentation of Yehuda that he is exempt? After all, when the warning was given and he's about to hit the two men at one time, in that one act, we'll say, he is definitely hitting his father. Omar Rebbe Chanina. Ne'emar brocha lemato v'ne'emar brocha lemala. The term brocha is a euphemism. So for our purposes, really it means a curse. So you see the term klola. Lemata. Lemata means regarding parents. V'ne'emar brocha lemala. And you see this issue featured regarding the Almighty. Heaven forbid. But that could be. Ma lemala she'ein bo shutfus. Just like when it comes to the Almighty, there is no partnership. the Almighty is a singular entity, if we can speak in those terms. Oneness. No partnership. Af lemata she'ein bo shutfis. So too, when it comes to parents, it has to be, in order for the offense of klola to be violated, it has to be in a situation where there is no partnership. In this case, we're dealing with a suffek. In order to create guilt or offense, two people have to be partnered up. True, he's hitting them at one time, but there's a partnership element. That's as far as cursing is concerned. The iskish hako'o leklola. And we find in the psukim regarding cursing and regarding hitting are positioned next to each other. And you might want to note that Rashi cites the sources for these things. Rashi says, iskish hako'o leklola beparshas v'yela mishpotim somchon inyan. In Parshas Mishpatim and Sefer Shmois, so these topics are near one another. Elo sheposuk echad mafsik b'neim, v'iko l'mandam hekesh hu be'elul heina nechnokin. Even though hakah hitting is featured in posuk tesvav and klola is featured in posuk yud zayin, there's posuk tesayin that appears between them, but nevertheless that's considered close enough, according to one opinion, to create comparison. So just like in the case of Klola, we ruled out Shutfis, in the case of Hakah, which is the topic at hand, if you like the pun, then even that's even better, Hakah also rules out Shutfis. V'oile b'mishmoro shelzeh v'shelzeh v'eino cholek. The suffek born from one man, one of two men, we don't know who his father is, but we know they're both Kohanim. So the Mishnah said he enters the Beis HaMikdash in the service group of each one, but does not receive a portion. If he doesn't receive a portion of sacrifices, why does he then go into the Beis HaMikdash as the service to serve as part of the service group of Kohanim? The Gemara asks, what kind of question is that? What do you mean, why does he go to serve? He says, I want to do a mitzvah, I want to offer sacrifices. Even without receiving a portion, you're still doing a mitzvah, you're fulfilling a mitzvah by serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Like, it's not all about eating. Elo, olo lo katoni, elo oila bal korcho. The Gemara feels, and there's quite a bit of discussion surrounding this particular point in the Gemara, but Tosfos raises this problem. Nevertheless, the Gemara feels that the Mishnah's choice of the word ole implies forced. Had the Mishnah taught ola, that would mean something optional. Here you have a fellow that wants to do a mitzvah. But that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says ole. Ole implies bal korcho, that he has to. Why is that? Omar Rav Acho Bar Chanina, Omar Abaye, Omar Rabbi Asi, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Pagam Mishpocha. The Rashi on this, Mishum Pagam, Shtei Mishpocha. So you have two families, Sheboishin Olav, that are embarrassed. Shiyomu B'nei Odom, Posulu Avoda. This kid is unfit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So that these families, the families of Mr. 1, the families of Mr. 2, are worried about that. So in order to prevent the embarrassment of the families, we say you have to serve in the Beis HaMikdash so that people will not think that you have someone who's disqualified, who's unfit, that came forth from them. V'im hoyu shnehem b'mishmor echad noitel chelik echad. If these two kohanim husbands were in the same service group, so the suffek gets one portion. The Gemara asks, "Maishno shnei mishmoros deloi." What is different about the case of two separate service groups, where we say that the ozil lahor mishmoru matulei, V'ozil laha mishmara umatulei. If he goes to one service group, we said that the service group represents a week of service of different groups of kohanim. So if you have this suffix attempting to serve in the service group that meets, let's say, their term of service is 1 week during the winter. So they'll tell him, you're not part of our group, you're part of the other guy's service group that meet, they meet in the summer. So that to each group that he goes, each one will say, Matzle means they push him away. You're not part of us, you're part of the other guy's service group. Well, Mishmor, Echad Nami, and Mishmor, we said, is a service group, it's a group of Kohanim that they serve in the Beis Hamikdash for a week, twice a year. Let's focus on the fact they service in the Beis Hamikdash for a 1 week period. That service group is broken down into a second subdivision called a Beis Av. A group of Kohanim that serve for 1 week, that group is subdivided into daily service units called a Beis Av. So the Mishnah said that if the two men, the two husbands, were part of one service group, so the Safek can go and get a portion. But the Gemara is asking, Mishmor Echad Nami, Ozu Lahai Beis Av U'Matchulei, Ozu Lahai Beis Av U'Matchulei. This Safek will go to that particular day's subdivision group, the Beis Av, and say, you're not part of our Beis Av. Your father is the other guy. He serves on another day. So, still, how can the Mishnah say that he gets a portion? Each daily group will push him off. So, you're not entitled to a portion. You're not here to diminish the amount that each one of us are going to get. Omar Rav Papa, Hachi Kamar. So, Rav Papa explains that this is what the Mishnah's intention is. Im hoyu shneim mishmor echad ubeis av echad. And here we dashed on the key additional phrase. If the two husbands are part of the same week service group and they also happen to both serve on the same day, so this suffek, this doubtful son, no tail chelek echad, then he'll be able to get a single portion. No one will be able to push him off. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.